I don't know what's real. I don't know what's not real.
Limited Capacity is a collection of six darkly amusing stories about the mysterious ways we interact with the internet and with each other.
There's something going on with him. It's like an act. I don't trust him.
What?
You're staring at me like I should say something, but I don't really know what to do here.
That's the whole name of the game. Don't talk about how the town isn't real. Do you understand?
Limited Capacity. Available now on CBC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Welcome to Sick Boy, a podcast where we talk about what it's like to be sick. This week's guest is Ardra. She has MS. Let's talk about it. My dad's the worst. My dad is the one who, like, legit, like, Taylor just does it to fucking poke, but my dad does it and is like, I don't know, I don't hear it. And I'm like,
I don't hear it.
Yeah, you don't hear it. I know you don't. Yeah. Anyway, I think that's a perfect segue into the fact that we're talking to Ardra today about MS. Has nothing to do with misophonia.
No.
The letter M and the letter S are in there, I guess, somewhere.
Yeah, I was like,
it's
actually,
like the one symptom you don't get from MS. Yeah. Maybe you do, I don't
maybe
know.
Maybe you do, yeah. Maybe you're just not far along yet into that journey. Yo, this is really exciting. This is our first MS episode.
That's amazing, because lots of people have MS.
There's a buttload of people out there with it.
Yeah, it's pretty common.
Yeah.
It's pretty crazy because... I always say that, like, it's pretty crazy, and then say whatever I'm going to say after. I'm just not going to say that anymore, and I'm going to cut out all of me saying this, so I sound really great.
It's definitely going to stay in.
Don't worry, I'll edit this so that I can do it personally. Mm-hmm. But what I was going to say is you said it's surprising that this is our first MS episode because so many people have it, but is it true that you can be diagnosed with MS early on in life, but not really exhibit symptoms until much later?
I feel like MS is marketed as a drug as a disease that's not that bad by a lot of the drug companies that, like, hey, if you take this $60,000 drug a year,
$60,000 a year drug.
Yeah, right. That it's not that bad. But yeah, it's a young person's disease. Most people get diagnosed between the ages of 20 and 40, and you might think it's not that bad when you're younger because it's a progressive disease. Mm-hmm. So it gets worse as you go, and it's not obvious maybe until you start using a mobility aid or something like that.
Right. So I should go back and correct myself. I said this is our first MS episode, but we've actually recorded two MS episodes. One never got released because our guest, after we recorded it, she was very young, in her 20s, early to mid 20s. And she's from here in Toronto, actually. And she got a job, exciting and well-paying job. And she requested that we don't put the episode out because she didn't want her employers to find out that she had MS.
She was totally smart and right to do that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it was a very physically demanding job. Like, it was like welding or
doesn't
something
matter,
like that.
Even if it wasn't, like...
Actually, I believe it was pro wrestling. I think she was, I think it was a, yeah.
I thought she was a Navy SEAL.
Yeah. Right. But she was very early on into her MS diagnosis. It was all very new for her.
Yeah.
Within like the span of a year. And then we did a very similar recording with somebody else who very new into their diagnosis. And it was one of those situations where we lost the data of an episode, which like has happened three times so far out of the hundreds and hundreds of episodes, which was just really unfortunate. So let's not fuck this one up. I hope it stays. I know it will. But like you were talking about how it's a young person's disease, and both of those people were very young, like in their 20s.
I was 23 when I was diagnosed.
Hit with it. Right. How old are you now?
That a different age.
Okay, got it.
You know, so I was going to ask.
Never ask. Speaking of etiquette classes, never ask a lady.
So, and I was going to, excuse me, I was going to ask you your age only because I feel like it's relevant in the context of speaking of the progression of MS and kind of how things go as you get older with the disease. However, if you don't want to say that, and that's
Let's play the guessing game.
By etiquette wise.
Let's play the guessing game.
All right.
35.
I was going to say 34.
Is this like a Price is Right thing?
I'll take it.
One. Yeah.
Do the $1.
Okay, let's not make this about my age. Here's the thing. Sure. You can get diagnosed at 50 for sure. Mm-hmm. And MS is different in everyone. It really is. So it's a different disease in everybody. So it doesn't necessarily have the same trajectory. You're not going to say, oh, you're 15 years in, this is where you're going to be. You're 10 years in, this is where you're going to be. You're 20 years in. It doesn't work that way.
Like, it moves faster for some people and slower for others.
Exactly. Kind of thing. And there are a lot of new drugs that are out and that are coming out all the time that are kind of slowing down the disease in some people. Mm. So it's impossible to predict how it's going to go.
Okay, so with your experience then,
yeah.
You were diagnosed, did you say 23?
I was.
So how did you find that out?
I went blind basically overnight.
Well, that's pretty intense.
It was terrifying, yeah. I wasn't terrifying. I thought I was stressed. I started having pain in one of my eyes, and a few days later, my vision was getting blurry. I went to the doctor. The doctor said, you're stressed, take some time off. Which was impossible, but I believed him. I thought I was having some kind of weird migraine, and I wasn't that worried about it. Mm-hmm. And then I woke up a few days after that, and I really couldn't see out of my eye at all. So I walked to Emerge, spent the day there, had some tests, and the next day the doctor said, you have optic neuritis, which is usually caused by MS, or like 50% of the time. Mm-hmm. There's a 50% chance you have MS. And then I lost my shit and totally freaked out.
Mm.
Yeah.
And do they, like, what are the, so 50% chance, are they then going, well, now we'll do like some tests?
Yeah. Now we're going to do an MRI and see if you start having more symptoms. Sort of a month later, I had a lot of trouble walking.
Because it's nervous system, right? Is it?
Yeah.
What's your elevator pitch for what MS is? You know, like people who go, oh, CF, I don't know what cystic fibrosis is.
Right.
I'm like, it's a chronic genetic lung disease where the lungs slowly but surely like fail.
Yeah.
Boom. You kind of get the idea, like your lungs aren't doing all right.
Right. Like the dumbed down version.
I don't know what MS is.
Okay. So your nerves have a fatty coating called myelin. And when that, it's like a protective sheath. So when that gets eroded, your body attacks it. It gets little scars on it. And then the nerves don't conduct as well. So they don't fire as well. So it's not that my muscles are wasting away. It's that the nerves aren't firing. So my brain tells my leg to pick up and move. It doesn't.
It just doesn't. Right.
Yeah.
So the nerves of the body sort of stop in a way. Or
think
of
like your phone charger.
Mm.
If the cord was sort of
frayed, yeah.
Exposed in different spots. It wouldn't. You might be able to like wiggle it around and get it to work, but
that's a
really great way of putting it because I have dealt with that. Very relatable.
Super relatable, dude. Like, tell me about it. It's so relatable. I have also had that issue with my phone charger, and it is just so relatable to the struggles of MS.
You can just get a new phone charger.
Yeah.
And like, I'm not a doctor. I don't understand why we can't put like duct tape on the nerves. Like, just wrap them up.
Where's the electrical
like,
tape,
that
doc?
That doesn't make sense to me, but apparently we're not there yet with science.
But to come back on that,
we're
you can get some like electrical tape and maybe that helps it and it kind of works. But that doesn't exist
thing,
in MS.
No.
So what is that $60,000 a year drug sort of idea that you were talking about earlier? Is that just a whole spoonful of bullshit that is being fed to people with MS? That like,
I mean,
there's these drugs out there that can basically
cure big you business.
Or, right.
So it's the most expensive diagnosis you can get in North America.
Oh, fuck.
Whoa,
MS.
I didn't know that.
That's a crazy
yeah.
set.
So you're diagnosed young, but your life expectancy is more or less the same. So you're on these drugs long term, and they're super expensive, and they don't cure you. They just
out of pocket
slow down progression. I mean,
depending,
most people.
Yeah, unless you're in a, unless you're in some sort of like covered plan through insurance or whatever.
But actually, when I was diagnosed, when I asked my doctor, like, "What do you what can you do?" He said, "Are you rich?"
Yeah, get a good job.
He said that to me.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Crazy.
I know.
Because we don't talk. We don't talk about money that much because of
that's
because
pretty
of the
fucking
Canadian
rad that he said that. Like, I gotta say that. Like, I think
maybe not in that context.
Maybe not in that context, but. Kudos to him for just being like, well, I'm going to fucking give it to you real.
Yeah.
This is financially, you're fucked.
Yeah.
Like, and so start, like, do what you can to go forward and try to figure that out because, man, that's how I would want it. That's how I would want to know.
Yeah.
He's like,
well,
what can I do?
And be
like, get fucking insurance.
Yeah.
Go get a job, get insurance, get something that's going to help you because if you don't, this is going to suck. Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So, okay, well,
that's why it was good that your girl canceled.
Yes,
right?
That's right. Yeah. Right, right. That totally makes sense now.
Yep.
Right.
But what is it? So what is the, we don't talk that much about money because of the Canadian health care system.
Yeah.
So what is that to you? Because I would have just assumed without having a conversation with you, if I talked to somebody who has MS, I would just assume, okay, well, all your shit is covered.
It's
but,
not.
But like.
If you don't have private insurance, there are some drugs you can get through like provincial assistance, like Trillium.
Right.
But for sure, there are some people that can't afford treatment.
Because they just like the, and is it because it's not deemed like.
No, it's prescription drugs. Like if you need antibiotics, if you don't have insurance, you pay for those.
In and different provinces work differently. So like for me in Nova Scotia, man, one of the big reasons why I live in Nova Scotia is the fact that I don't have to pay for any of my meds.
Yeah, that's
any
great.
Of my antibiotics, any of that stuff.
Wow.
Not a single cent.
Wow.
However, if I lived here or if I lived in Vancouver, I would have a few of the vitals, like my enzymes, those would always be covered no matter what, because like I will die if I don't have those. But my omeprazole sitting right next to it there on the table, like I would have to pay for those, or I would have to pay for my tobramycin. That's an antibiotic that, you know, fights bacteria in the lungs.
Right. So I guess that's the question that I'm having is like, if you're not going to die without it, is that,
well, I don't know about that. I don't know about other, like other drugs and other sort of illnesses where if it's, I don't know. I think it all kind of really depends on how much lobbying your society, you know, your, like the MS Society or the CF Canada is doing to be like, we need these drugs. We need the coverage for these drugs.
Like with Maddie Vanstone.
That's right.
That,
yeah, exactly.
That,
exactly.
That drug covered. Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's also just another one of the hassles of having an illness is negotiating all that paperwork and what drugs you can get and making choices based on what your resources are.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, when we mentioned the guests that we had recorded with, when we had recorded that first MS episode and then she was like, oh, well, you know, I'm getting this job and, you know, obviously we were like, oh, of course, like we respect that if you don't want to put your episode out. And then a part of us is going at the same time, like, oh, but I wish that it wasn't like that. I wish that you could feel totally okay. And you had a very like immediate response to that. Like, oh, good. Like, that's good that she didn't do that. So that kind of like surprised me. So like, what is that? Where does that response come from? That like immediate, like, oh, that's good that she didn't do that.
I remember where I was working at the time, somebody in HR kind of flippantly telling me at one point that everyone's premiums went up because of me.
Whoa.
Yeah. Like
so, what?
Like, don't take it personally, but like just
yeah,
you know.
Like just like a bitchy little side thing. I mean,
whoa,
God, that's crazy.
Was it true?
I guess so. I don't know. I mean,
that's so crazy.
Yeah.
So just because you came into the job and you are sick, that it just like jacked up everyone else's shit. Like
I
that's
mean, I don't know how dramatic it was. I just it was like a flip
by
comment,
like five
and I was
cents.
Like. Yeah, it was bitchy.
Right, sure.
It's hard negotiating a career and illness, and I think everybody has to make their own decision about what's right for them for how they disclose. Mm. I was so young and naive. I regret being as open as I was.
Mm.
It's before you know everything that you want to do, I feel like I was treated differently. I don't know how much I want to say about that, but it's different.
Are employers looking at you as like a liability, as like
you definitely are. I mean not necessarily a liability, but we're not where we would like to think we are in terms of accommodating different needs. And yeah, it's such a personal thing. It's
like, because I'm wondering, because I know that in the case of the woman we recorded with, that I know that her job was very physically demanding. So she would, I think from what I gathered when she told us that she'd want us to release the episode was, you know, I don't want them to think that I'm going to like lose my physical capability to do this physically demanding
job.
To suplex
like large men, large women on a day to day basis, stone cold stunners, you know, the sharpshooter. Like she wants to fly off the top ropes, you know?
Like, right, exactly. Yeah.
I've definitely missed out on some opportunities for having disclosed my health in different situations where I knew I was capable, but because I couldn't.
What's one example of that just like fucking rocks you to this day?
So do you remember CBC was doing the Great War Project a few years ago?
It does sound super familiar.
Yeah. So they were taking people who were closely related to
the Great War is World War One, right?
Yeah. So descendants of war vets who had a lot of historical documents and stuff tied to their family and stories. And my mom had published a book of my great grandfather's war correspondence.
Cool.
So I had a ton. Yeah. Anyway, they were doing this movie and they were doing reenactments and they were taking these descendants over to Europe and having them like sleep in the trenches and live the way their ancestors would have. Ooh. And, I was going to be in that. And, they said no when all the paperwork came to a head and you had to disclose any chronic illness. Mm. I should have lied.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. And also back then I was healthier than I am now, you know, like you wouldn't have known there was anything wrong with me.
Yeah. Right. I hosted a children's television show on CBC. Mm-hmm. And when I first got that job, there was, they had this whole like physical, there was like, you got to have this like physical, you got to see a doctor and just like, you know, we need to know like your medical history. So I was like, you know, I would have been 20 maybe, like not even like 19. And so I go, yeah, but I don't know. I got cystic fibrosis, blah, 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 this, that, and the other thing, put it all down. Circumcised at 14, just you know, might as well put that in there. I don't know. And then I remember we were in Halifax, like we were days from shooting, and everything was very rushed because they were coming up to their schedule to start shooting, and they didn't have, or I guess rehearsal/prep, and they didn't have a host up to this point, and they were like scrambling, they were running out of time, so there wasn't much time for like error. And the producer of the show, this guy Charles Falzon, great guy, he says, Jared, can we go for a walk? Let's just take a walk. And I was like, yeah, sure. So we walk out of the CBC building, the old one on Bell Road, and it was the old radio building at the corner of Sackville South Park there. Yeah. So we go across the street into Public Gardens, this beautiful, like, you know, it's just like drop dead gorgeous,
like a mini Central Park.
Exactly. And so we're walking through the flowers and the trees.
What time of year was it? Paint a picture.
it's summertime, so it's like it's very gorgeous.
Oh, full bloom.
And
full
he,
bloom.
You know, we walk and it's like
totality.
But he's like this little walk gets very, very. It's a somber kind of situation. It feels like I'm like this feels heavy. Like something's coming up, and I could tell he didn't know how to bring up this thing that he wanted to talk about. So he sits me down on this bench and he goes, what's the deal with your illness? And I remember going, oh fuck, this is it. I'm gonna, like, my first ever professional acting gig, I'm gonna lose it.
Yeah.
And so I just like, again, I was very open and I just told him everything. And I was like, dude, I'm like really healthy for having this thing. And he goes, do you get sick often? Like, what is the, like, how often do you take, like, do you need time off work a lot? And I'm like,
yeah,
no, I was like, look, if I got sick, it would be the first time in a long time. Like I am literally at the peak of my health. I've never been healthier in my life. And I remember he gives me this like moment where he's looking at me and I was thinking he's making the choice right now.
Yeah.
To like either pull the plug.
Or like or he believes you or not. Going.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's looking at you and counting up the sick days.
And he just goes, okay.
Don't fuck me over.
Yeah.
On this.
Yeah. No, he's very sweet about it, but he was like, okay. But I feel like that moment, that could have been a moment where I lost out on something staggeringly huge in my life.
So, and like the CBC thing for me was a small thing. I think what I didn't understand or expect and was very shocked by in a lot of ways when I was diagnosed at 23, I didn't expect anybody was going to treat me any differently than they ever had before. Mm. I did really naively didn't think I was going to be judged differently or looked at differently. And that all came really clear, like gradually over the next couple of years. And it shocked me.
Now, did it shock you and sort of set you back? Or do you think it shocked you and made you, turned you into more of like an advocate for yourself and like made you stronger to be like, no, like, no, I'm not going to fucking stand for this.
I feel like I was really lucky to start off with MS with a pretty decent amount of self-esteem. Mm. I feel like that allowed me to not believe what other people believed about me.
Right.
So, but I can see how for other people, any insecurities you might have get magnified by this. We have this idea as a society that somebody with an illness or disability or disease is damaged goods.
Mm-hmm.
And, it sucks. It's not, it's not true. So I was a very reluctant advocate for a long time. I didn't, I stopped telling people that I was sick or had an illness for a long time. And only recently started talking about it more openly and more publicly. And that's because it's obvious now. I use a walker. I use a cane.
Yeah. And the, so, people can't see that. But like when you rolled up in a cab today and we went down to let you in and you walk very slowly.
Yeah.
You know, you have to be very careful in the way you walk. You have one of those, you know, like a walker with wheels that you have like two hands on.
It's called a rollator. We don't say walker anymore.
A rollator?
A rollator?
I know.
A rollator. Yeah. I fucking know. Like that.
It should be called like a rollator 5000.
Right?
Yeah. Like some sweet number afterwards.
Yeah.
The MB 2000.
Yeah, the MB 2000. You've got a cane there and that, which is kind of a bitchin' cane. I like that.
Ding to shit.
Yeah.
Like I paid a lot of money for this solid maple cane and I, on the very first day, dropped it. Like
That's okay. It's got carrots.
It is a beautiful handle. I really like that handle.
So when did you?
It's cool.
So in this, so you know, you said you were 23 when you got diagnosed, and you know, if like you get diagnosed, and you know, other than the fact that you went blind overnight, somebody would look at you and not think anything wrong with you, that there's anything wrong with you. Like, what was that from the diagnosis to you now having a cane and having a Rollator 5000? like what is that progression like for you and what's like how what was the length of time where you started to see like shit changing?
Ugh. You're totally trying to figure out my age.
Yeah,
no, I'm not.
The year you got to, what kind of cars were driving on the roads when you got diagnosed?
Nice try. You know, it's there's this frustrating thing with having an invisible illness where sort of a lot of your life is maybe ruled by what's going on with your illness, but people are like, you look fine. There's nothing wrong with you. And the expectations
Suck
are different.
It up.
Yeah. There's a lot of that and it's frustrating. And you kind of walk this line of like, oh, I know I don't look sick, but you need a little bit of understanding in certain ways. But now having something that's visible, but looking so young and good, I get
Very
questions
good.
All the time. And it's like, It's oh, I hate it.
Do you mean like
what kind of questions?
Oh my God, like you're too happened? Young for this. Like,
I have heard definitely happens? Like you're too young to be using one of those in reference to my Rollator 5000.
I bet you get
ID'd. Is this a style thing?
At the liquor store still.
I got ID'd at the liquor store maybe 2 years ago was the last time.
Brian got ID'd the other day. I was like,
and
wow.
I got mad. Anyway, because I didn't have ID because I don't drive, so I left without boots.
You're like, I've got a Rollator 3000. How old do you think I am? Come on.
No, now that I use a walker, I never get ID.
Yeah, that's
people
right.
It's definitely a different thing. And I notice different things, right? Like, this city is not accessible. Mm-hmm. Step it up, Toronto. I was in Spain last year, and all the restaurants and bars are accessible.
Mm.
And
really?
If Spain can do it, they have much older infrastructure than we do.
I would have gone the other way when you started that sentence. I would have been like, oh, yeah, probably nothing is accessible in Spain because of the age of the city.
No, right. They're good.
It's something that I've noticed. And you know, what made me notice how not accessible, unaccessible Toronto is? Was when I started to see all of these, is it hashtag mind the gap or like mind the gap? That's
stop it. Gap.
Stop gap.
Yep.
I started seeing these everywhere and I was like, and I was on Queen West looking down, like looking east from Trinity Bellwoods. And I could just see these ramps, these little mini ramps that are pushed up against the doorways of all the shops, all the restaurants, all the bars, like as far as your eye can see.
You guys should do a show with the stopgap people.
Oh my God, yeah, it'd be amazing.
You totally should, because they are awesome.
Yeah.
And at least half of what they're good for is exactly what you just said.
Just to point it out.
Is to point it out, because once you get in there with that stopgap, you probably can't use the bathroom.
Yeah.
And it doesn't even mean that there's enough room for a wheelchair to get in there anyway.
So what is stopgap? I mean, you don't have to dive into it because they're not here, but like for someone who's like, what the fuck are they talking about? What is it?
So, yeah. And I mean, I can't speak for that company either, but I think that they donate these little wedges that are like little ramps that allow access to shops and restaurants and bars in the city where there's just like a little lip like it's the smallest possible modification. It's less than the least a business could do.
Think
on
of
its own.
Half a step.
Yeah.
Right. It's literally half of like a full step in your on the staircase in your house.
Yeah.
That's the space between the sidewalk and the entrance to, you know, the boutique, whatever.
The Nums? Starbucks or whatever. It's the difference between being able to go into a business and not for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Now I'm so interested to know who those people are, because like when you were talking about them, I was picturing them as like a group of like ninjas striking at night and putting in these wedges so people can
access
buildings.
Maybe that's what they do.
Like accessibility vigilantes.
Yeah. But then I was thinking like, well, if there are people who are so passionate about that, are they themselves affected by that? And are they rolling around in wheelchairs at night and doing it? Or are they like friends or family of other people who are trying to...
You gotta talk to stopgap.
Yeah, fascinated.
You're really going... really trying to... Like, creating something in your mind there.
Absolutely.
We had no one who's listening to the show, not no one, but like few people who are listening would know this because it was a live episode. So we only put it out to like our Patreon subscribers.
If you'd like to support us, go on over to www.patreon.com/sickboy and listen to our live episode.
Shameless plug. And we were doing an episode with this guy named Josh Cassidy, and he was a wheelchair marathon racer.
We did release that on iTunes.
Yeah, I think we did because we wanted to. Anyway.
So we were recording this at Movember's headquarters, and they were in a building, elevator, totally accessible. They moved to a house in like a residential neighborhood in the city, and we're at the show and we're setting up, and then we're like, dude, Josh is in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
This place has no accessibility.
It's literally
whatsoever.
A split entry. Yeah. So not only a split entry, there's like several of those half steps up to like a little ledge, and then that gets to the door, and then you get into the doorway, and it's this like very small, whatever, like a, what would you say, like a vestibule or like a, right. like a, yeah, you yeah, know, yeah. one of those like things that stop the cold air from getting into
Good
the building.
Word. Vestibule.
Is that it? Is that the word?
In real estate, we call those jogs.
Jogs. Okay. Right. Thank you.
So he gets
but
there.
But then on top of that, you get through that, and it's a full staircase up to get to where you need to be.
Yeah, right.
Or a full staircase down to where you need to be. And yeah, we were like, oh.
Yeah. I mean, just such to, a forehead just smack. To, just to speak to like accessibility and then kind of like a funny scenario where we were like smacking our foreheads going, what the fuck? Dude. We didn't even tell Josh. And then
we're scrambling for his number. We were like, yeah. Oh, we don't have his number. And then we tell him. And then we got to prepare him.
He gets there. I mean, dude, this guy's a wheelchair marathon racer. Like, he's basically got like, I mean, he has like 5% use of his legs. So his legs are super small. But he literally goes from his waist. He's like the guy in
Family Guy. He's an upside down pylon.
He's like Joe from Family Guy. He goes from his waist into this like perfect V shape up to these huge shoulders and chest and arms.
He's
he
so
literally
fit.
He literally takes himself out of his wheelchair and like
dude, you know what it was like?
Crawls up and like launches himself
he
up the stairs.
He handstand walked up the stairs with the wheelchair on his feet.
He didn't do that, but picture this. Picture a gorilla deciding, I'm not going to use my legs. I'll just use my arms.
Yeah.
He just went like he might as well have just been like giving this guttural like sound of like the jungle as he hoists himself up a whole flight of stairs without touching it.
And someone's like, should we take your wheelchair? And he's like, no, got it. And like takes it, like hauls his wheelchair.
Oh my God.
And we're going, oh my God, you're amazing.
You know what? Maybe we can just like cut this little thing, but how amazing would it be to link him and Stopgap up to do like because watching that was like, A, it was impressive as fuck.
Yeah.
But also B, it was like, you're capable of doing this. Not many people are.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. And you do it with such like they're just such an air of like, yeah, fuck you. I'm coming in here.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to do it anyway.
Yeah.
And it was like kind of a, oh, geez. Yeah. Accessibility.
But I mean, to bring
accessibility, it's there. Oh, yeah.
To bring that back. Like, what's when you're going around Toronto, are you how often are you encountering a situation where you're like
every
where,
day
where it sticks out every
day? Every
day.
Yeah. And disability affects a lot of people. It's, I think that I hope that this is the next big social justice movement in this country, really. I mean, we've talked a lot about making, bathroom access for everybody. Mm-hmm. And it's like, that's a hot button issue right now, especially talking about transgender and gender neutral bathrooms. For anybody who can't handle stairs, there's no bathroom at all in most restaurants in this city.
Right.
You know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, right.
And nobody's talking about that, you know? Like, it's...
Sorry, what was it? For most restaurants...
Dude, think about all the restaurants that we've ever, like, really... When we've eaten here, and you go, excuse me, where's the bathroom? They always go down the stairs.
It's
and
it's in like the down, dungeon.
Yeah,
it's,
yeah.
Right, right, okay.
Yeah. So, I've never thought about that either.
Yeah.
Wow, fuck.
And, that's a whole segment of the population that has no bathroom.
What do you do?
Sometimes they'll tell you, oh, there's a restaurant a few doors down that we have an agreement with. You can go and use their bathroom.
Whoa.
Yeah. So,
which is no easy task for someone who has to pick up their Rolaid 3000 and get up and move out.
Especially if it's like a slow process. If you got to move slow.
Brutal.
Like, whoa, three doors down. Okay, yeah, sweet. See you in 30 that would be minutes.
That would be embarrassing as a restaurant owner or manager or
you
staff
would think
member
so.
There. I would guess, yeah.
You would think so. Oh. But this is the thing. It's we need to do better with our laws. There's a huge bar around the corner from where I live. It's huge. They just did a massive renovation 2 years ago. It must have cost them a fortune. And they didn't make it accessible.
Get out of here.
I don't know how much it would have cost. It cannot have been that much to make it accessible. But I guess they've done the math and figured that having a table where that bathroom could be and is better for them financially. So it's, we don't care about this percentage or this part of the population. You're not invited.
Think of your favorite one-hit wonder.
Or that overpriced toy your parents would never let you have.
Or that TV show that no one else remembers because it was canceled way too soon. Now what if we could fix it? I'm Francesca Ramsey.
And I'm DeLon Grant. And after 20 years of friendship, we are now hosting a new nostalgia podcast called Let Me Fix It.
Each episode, we'll dig into our favorite celebrities, shows, and brands of yesteryear, and then imagine what it would take to repackage them for relevance today.
Think of our show as an intervention, but with way less stakes.
So subscribe to Let Me Fix It wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Do you think, like, I wonder, and part of the issue, and part of the issue with I think, moving forward a law or something is that the people who aren't affected by accessibility issues need to be like, they need to know the struggle. Because when we sit here, yeah, and we talk to you, then we go, whoa, yeah, crazy. But if we're not, then we don't see it because we don't have to deal with it.
We need like some kind of leader. Like the,
is there some type of art project?
Let's do, let's start a podcast. Okay. Where we talk to people who are sick. And we pump it out to as many people as we possibly can to help raise awareness.
So this is the thing about why I'm writing my blog also is to normalize it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not people that are locked away that, like, we're everywhere, yeah, you know?
So tell us about your...
I mean,
just to kind of round off that thought for a second on the accessibility thing, because I was thinking, like, how is there a way that you can just, like, that you can show people who aren't affected by accessibility issues that accessibility issues are a super huge thing.
Well, dude,
I think that there's a thing
that, like, that is the thing that made.
No, there's something that where people are building ramps that go nowhere or something like that. Like, it's a ramp into a wall, and it's like something along those lines where it's like, this is like something that's happening. It's like this project where they're building some like useless like entrance into something to highlight. It's some type of thing that highlights like a uselessness of some sort, and it's like to highlight the fact that it's to highlight that you can't get that.
Are you talking about an existing thing?
Yeah, and I can't fucking put my finger on it. I can't remember what it is. Anyway, so we can fucking cut that out. But
the thing that I was thinking is, like, it would be really sweet to do like a citywide art project or installation where you eliminate all access to bathrooms or whatever if nobody
for one full day.
Yeah, if nobody with there or
if you,
anything
if you have green eyes, you can't use the bathroom in the restaurant or like something random, right? Yeah. Like where there's just a significant portion of the people that can't, but the rest can.
Exactly. Like, to highlight,
how do we get people to care about accessible bathrooms as much as the general population seems to care about gender neutral bathrooms? Yeah. Like, a lot of change has happened in a short amount of time with respect to that. Mm-hmm. I feel like it needs to happen for.
And so you do that and then you go, oh yeah, you have green eyes, you can't use a bathroom. Well, guess what? That's what she goes through every day. That's what he goes through every day when they
but
go.
But first give them a pitcher of beer.
Right.
Yeah. Sick Boy Podcast will be right back after this word from our sponsors. Tell us about what you're up to, because you have a blog.
I do.
And what's the deal with it?
It's called Tripping on Air, and I write about life with MS. I try to make it funny and like normal, you know? Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's good. I like it.
When did you start it? Like, how long has it been going?
It's been going for 2 years, and I started it because I was starting to be more visibly disabled, and I was not tired of explaining it so much. I mean, I get questions from strangers, and they don't read my blog. but just this idea that there's this kind of story or this narrative out there about me. I just wanted to put it in my own words and to just tell my version of it, to get it on the record. But also, I think, to connect with other people kind of going through the same thing. When I was diagnosed and looking to find that voice, like somebody that resonated with me, that was my age and going through a lot of the same life experiences, what I found was books written by older white men. Actually, not just white, Montel Williams. It's like a young woman's disease. Mm-hmm. Like, men get it too, and some older people get it too, but it's like 2.5 to 1 women and younger women. And I wasn't finding those stories, and I wasn't finding those voices that resonated with me. Like, a lot of what I was finding was this kind of, everything's great, it's not that bad. Like, just not really telling it like it really is.
Like, cheer me up stuff rather than like...
but it's just like not authentic, right? Like, I think, you have to have a positive attitude, but I also wanted to know what it's really like.
Have you had many people reach out to you and thank you for for putting that online and giving them something to relate to?
Yeah, I think so. It's always, it always feels good when somebody reaches out and says, like, that's exactly what I'm feeling.
Is there like any one particular piece that you've written that you would kind of say above all else people have really responded to?
So I wrote one piece called Honey, I Peed the Bed. And that's about like, not about bathroom access, but about one thing that people don't often talk about with MS, and that's bladder dysfunction. So,
oh, really?
And I talk in that post very candidly about coming to terms with using a catheter, which Whoa. Still like Wait, super skeeves people out.
Just like in bed? Like every time you go to bed, you just insert a catheter?
No.
Oh, okay. I was like, holy fuck, that's so intense. Let's talk about that.
You should read the post.
Yeah, I will for sure.
No. So I talk about how I was having all these accidents and like waking up in the night and peeing the bed and crying and having all this trauma. And it's like so humiliating to feel like you're 4 years old again, but you're a grown ass woman. Mm-hmm. And even not getting a lot of support from doctors and medical staff. Who wanted me to try drugs and nothing was working and had a ton of side effects. Finally, it was suggested to me that I try a catheter. Intermittent self-catheterization is what it's called.
Holy fuck, that sounds so intense.
I know. It's not.
Catheterization?
Yeah.
That sounds so intense.
It's not.
It's not?
It's okay. Really not.
Because to me, right, I hear catheter. Yeah. All I can think of, tube up my pee hole.
Yeah.
Is that? Oh my god! I was like, and so
that's what it is. And guess what? So it's like way easier for dudes because it's like
that's what I heard.
Right there, right?
Okay, so tell me about this. Like, like self catheterization.
Yeah. I can show you. I have them in my purse.
Yeah.
Okay. So when I have to pee, I just take out this little catheter and I use it.
So how far up into your urethra does it have to go?
Just to hit the bladder. It's a few inches long. I'll show you
guys. Oh my God. Yeah. Like it has to go to the bladder.
It doesn't hurt. It feels like nothing. Really? Actually, you empty your bladder and you don't pee your pants. It's life changing.
Yeah, right.
It's like a simple workaround that sounds like a scary, terrifying thing.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Yeah.
What's scary and terrifying is peeing your pants.
Yeah. Right.
It's actually pretty fascinating to hear you say that it doesn't like hurt or anything like that. Because when I think of catheter, I feel like the word catheter hurts more than the catheter.
It doesn't hurt.
It gives phantom. The word catheter gives me phantom pain in my urethra.
You haven't said it enough.
Yeah. Catheter.
My mom uses it. Hey,
take it back. Yeah. She does?
Like 10 times a day.
Yeah, me too. That is another expensive thing. So that's like $700 a month.
Oh, so you don't only do it. For like surrounding bed, you do it like,
so the post is called Honey, I Peed the Bed because artistic license.
Right. But. Sure. So what's the, why, like, let's say you used it while you were here with us. Like
I probably will.
Okay. So why would you use that as opposed to just going and sitting on the toilet? That's
okay,
like accessible.
So yeah,
here's
what happens. So with MS, the nerve is shot that tells my bladder to let the pee out. So it holds it all in,
holds it in.
Bladder gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And then and you can't pee it out.
So
and
that's
then,
your way of making the decision to go, I'm going to release my, my pee to the world.
To the world.
Here it is, world.
I just need to tell the world.
So, but like accidents happen when that bladder is like stretched and over full. And then
do you feel it? Like, I guess so.
Like that got to pee.
Like, do you feel that like, oh, I have to urinate feeling?
So the first time, yeah, of course, definitely.
Okay. So feeling is all the same.
I used to feel that all the time. And then, after the first time I catheterized, I was like, oh my God, that's what it feels like to have an empty bladder. Like I hadn't felt that in so long.
Wow. Totally
left. Because you would just pee out a little bit.
Yeah. Enough that your bladder would go, I have no more space. Let me clear out just enough space and then take in more.
I think this is the thing too, is like just destigmatizing this idea of like, it's a solution.
Yeah.
It's like, it lets me go out and live my life.
Yeah.
And, yeah,
there's definitely a lot of stigma around around like those bodily functions.
Anything that scatological.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah. Like when we, like when we've talked to people with Crohn's and Crohn's and colitis and IBS and all that stuff. And like that, like being open and feeling comfortable to talk about like those bodily functions that are severely affected by your illness.
That's why I wanted to talk about it in my blog. I think it was the first post I even wrote because I felt like even doctors and nurses weren't talking to me about it appropriately.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I mean like that, like that's the, so I'm taken aback right now. Like I'm literally like, I have been shocked because I didn't realize that was a thing.
Yeah.
I didn't even know that that was a thing that people do. When you started talking about self catheterization, I'm going, oh my God. Well, A, that's fucking crazy. You give yourself a catheter. I didn't even know like that was a fucking option that you do it yourself. Like to me, I go that you clearly you must have a nurse do that for you or you must have a doctor do that for you.
I because, do it in my sleep.
Like, yeah. Right. Okay. Yeah. So, but then on top of that, you're not only doing it in bed, you just do it everywhere. Out in the world. And I'm going, how have I never fucking heard this before? Like, this is crazy. I didn't even know that that was a thing.
So I've got an idea for an art installation. So when you go to these places where there's no accessibility to the washrooms, you just take a bottle and under the table.
Oh, God, Jesus Christ, Brian.
And then you just leave that there on the table as a gift for them and write, make your bathrooms accessible.
Yeah. But
if you would like this to be in the toilet.
Yeah.
So my point there in that, like the fact that I'm so shocked is it's because because it has to do with our pee.
Yeah.
Or it has to do with our shit, or it has to do with our the things that we try to cover up, the things that we do behind closed doors. We just don't fucking talk about it.
Yeah.
And so someone who, this is our 115th episode that we've recorded in this whole process, and this is not something that has once come up and been talked about.
Yeah.
And so like how much is it not being talked about at all outside of these walls?
You know what I mean? Jer's like real excited.
Dude,
really excited.
It's kind of blowing my fucking mind.
I know, because when I think of MS or when I think of MS in terms of like what I've like digested socially, you think of, like they're losing mobility. They're having trouble walk, whatever those your appendages don't work as well or whatever it is that comes in. But you don't think about that. The nervous system rules your entire body. Like,
everything. Yeah.
So what, just to like shift gears a little bit, how has MS impacted your relationship? And have you been dating are you married or dating?
I'm married. Yeah. Married.
And when did you get married and how old was your husband when you got married?
He's
and
much
how old
older
is he now?
Yeah.
So I want you to close your eyes. Everybody close your eyes. Now picture this cityscape and on a road, you see a parked car there. And if you really zoom into the license plate right in the corner, you can see the registration date of that vehicle. What date is that? If that was the date that you were diagnosed with MS?
But you're married.
And, I'm married.
And
how long?
Yeah.
So this is interesting. So I was dating my husband before. Well, he was my boyfriend. Before I was good. Diagnosed.
Okay.
So we went through that diagnosis together.
Right.
And actually we were not serious when that was happening. So that was interesting time. That was, we broke up a few times in that first year of diagnosis.
Like directly because of MS or?
I mean, I don't know. It's hard to say, right?
Right.
Like it was a tumultuous time and we were like young and it's not like we were on solid footing when I was first diagnosed anyway, so it's hard to say. But he saw some scary stuff for sure. Didn't have a ton of support, I would say, from people in his life who thought it was a bad idea.
Right, like don't take this on.
Yeah, which was also shocking to me, like in my naivete. But we're married now. And that was a really interesting thing too. At the time when we were getting married, so many people told me how lucky I am. And that really angered up my blood.
Like, because like lucky
no one
is
said
you're,
like you're so lucky because you're damaged goods and he's a prize, like, just like you're so lucky. And like, so what was unsaid was he's marrying you even though, you know.
Yeah. Right. Like, wow, what a saint.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. And I like, he still gets a lot of that props for being a saint. He's a great guy, but I'm also a
saint?
Fucking prize.
Yeah, you're like, I don't know. Yeah.
But he ain't that great.
He's not a choose saint. Really
yeah,
loud.
Yeah, right.
That's good. Do you guys have kids? Or
we do not.
Do you?
Is that a thing? Like, what is that? Is that a possibility? Is that a
sure? Yeah, you can have kids. Okay. I don't want them. Mm,
yeah,
so
yeah.
And neither does he. So
cool.
Perfect.
Yeah.
That is a whole conversation that I find fascinating. I also don't want kids, and I live in this bubble, not on my side of the family, but especially on my girlfriend's side of the family. And we've been together for 7 years almost now, and like we're all but married.
Yeah.
And it's just that, like, you know, when you go to a wedding or you go to a family thing and it's like, well, winner, like, oh yeah, your kids are gonna have the most beautiful eyes, and you're like, dude, it's 2017. Okay, grandma. Okay, I get it. You're old.
If you
that's
have,
your way.
If that's you have a thing. Disease, people stop pressuring you.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't get that shit
that's
at all.
That's the workaround.
Yeah.
I feel like if I know friends with kids, I think that there would be a lot of judgment if I decided to have kids. Mm-hmm. I mean, fuck them. I would do it if I wanted to.
There would be a lot of judgment if you decided to have kids?
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Is there any piece of you that...
Well, I don't...
Because she's the disabled mom.
Yeah.
She's the mom who can't like fully be there for her kid because she's not going to be able to walk and carry and nurse her kid.
Dude, that's
on the street. She's got her Rolaid 3000.
See, these are the things that I wouldn't think about. Like, yeah, when you were like, oh yeah, like there'd be a lot of judgment. I was like, wait, what judgment for you? Like, I would never think that, but those are those things that you highlight. I mean, like the accessibility issue in that way. Like, there's just things that if you don't live with it, there's some things that you just never think that's a scenario. Mm-hmm. That's crazy.
So, you know, we mentioned you're married. He's been around basically since the very beginning. And he is this saint who just has a very loud chewing mouth. But aside from that, has your illness taken any kind of toll on your relationship? You know, like I know that how long have you been married? I'm not trying to do math. I am just generally curious.
No, we've been married for, actually, it's our anniversary in a couple of weeks. We've been married 13 years.
Okay. Congratulations.
Thank 13 you.
Years. Were you like 13 when you got married?
Mm. Wait, what?
Good that was math, like, Ryan.
That was, yeah. I was a child bride.
So I've been married for half that time. And,
yep.
And you know, with my situation with CF, it's definitely something that's like taken a toll on our relationship with Bridie and I, and in these ways that I wouldn't have maybe anticipated.
Yeah,
you know, it, like when we did decide to get married, looking back on it. So have you faced any of those where you've looked, you kind of look back and you go, wow, I didn't realize that was going to be so tough, or I didn't realize that was going to kind of stick out in our relationship the way it does.
Yeah. I don't know. We definitely thought a lot about what it was going to be like and continue to think about how we need to adapt to everything that's going on, because it's not a stagnant thing. It's a constantly evolving, changing disease. So yeah, it's difficult, but I think, there's some, in some ways it's maybe helped us because, I think I'm a very strong-willed, independent kind of person. And this is a way, having an illness makes me vulnerable in some ways that I think allows my husband, Carrie, to be there for me in a way that maybe he wouldn't have been allowed to be if it weren't. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a challenge that not all relationships have, but I think we're a good partnership and a good team, and we have good communication. I think that was another thing I was told right off the bat was that the divorce rate in MS was 80%.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Right. Oh my God.
I know. So we went into it knowing that also, but I think we do pretty well. I'm really proud of our marriage, actually.
We're coming up to time here, but there's something that you said there that made me, and I've been thinking about bringing it up, and then I keep forgetting. And so I want to say it now before we get to the end, but you were saying, you know, it's a roller coaster. It's an up and down constantly, you know, like relationships ever evolving. It made me think about MS. It's a progressive disease, right? Like
yeah.
In general, it's a disease that you start this downhill slope and that downhill slope just continues and you go down. Is there like peaks and valleys there? Like, do you come out of it and get better for a bit? And
yeah, so in the beginning of the illness, there are some periods of remission, which is sort of, it's not really the best word, but it's the word that we have.
Sure.
So where you experience some recovery. So like with my first attack, when I went blind, I could see just dark and light for months. I don't have enough vision to drive now, but I had a lot of recovery from that. So it's sort of, it might start here. This isn't good for a podcast. Yeah. Like you have an attack, you have some disability, and then you recover maybe 75% or 80%. Mm. So your baseline is not the same and you sort of,
it's like CF.
Yeah. It's kind of like your lungs.
That's
right?
what I've been going through is like, yeah, I'll get sick and I'll bounce back, but my bounce back is never
right
what
to your
it
baseline
was before, you know,
yeah.
or it's very rare that it would be. Right. So there, I recall watching a TED talk, from this woman who completely changed her diet. It was like, she went like green. And it was, you know, it was a very compelling TED talk. And she's, she was like pushing towards advancing some research into how diet could affect her people's MS.
Yeah.
I'm sure you've seen it.
Some interesting research going in that way. Mm-hmm. And I have done some experiments with diet too. I'm thinking of doing it a little bit more seriously. There's a lot of stuff out about like fasting, like serious,
like intermittent,
three days
okay,
a week, kind of like super reduced calories.
Right.
It's a really, really fascinating. Like this woman was, she was almost immobile, like completely immobile in like one of those really big wheelchairs where you're like stabilized, like at your neck and everything. And then she's like, hey, and that was like 2 years ago. And like, this is a picture of me doing like a 100-kilometer bike ride yesterday.
It's really like not to negate that. It's hard to say though, cause she could have had recovery.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. She could have. Yeah. And that's the thing. And I think her TED talk was more so focused on like, who knows? Like here's an option that maybe we should start to really look at.
For sure. Cause why is there so much MS now also? Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. For anyone who's curious, I'm almost 100% positive it's Minding Your Mitochondria. That's the name of the talk by Dr. Terry Walls, W-A-H-L-S, Walls. And it's a TEDx Iowa City talk.
Yeah.
but yeah, so I was just kind of curious if you were dabbling in that witchcraft of diet.
Well, and I've exhausted all of the drugs right now. So that's what's left. And I'm the personality type that feels like you got to do something, you know.
That's good.
Yeah.
Out of this entire process over X amount of years that we'll never really know, what would you say?
I feel
say?
Like this is making me sound older than I actually am.
You brought that on yourself. what would you say is the one thing that your MS has taken away from you?
Gosh, it's hard to know because honestly, I have had MS my whole adult life. So it's like shaped who I am as an adult. Maybe what I could say is more of what it's given me.
That was my next question. So
yeah,
go
like
for it. Yeah.
Perspective. I don't do anything I don't want to do ever. Like ever.
Mm-hmm.
I really use my time wisely. And I learn and I travel. Mm-hmm. And I really fill myself up. And I think that's maybe the gift of it.
Yeah.
Like the worst Santa ever.
Yeah.
Well, we're thankful that you're here spending your time with us.
If you don't, if you would ever do anything you don't want to do, thanks for being here.
I really don't. Yeah.
No, it does. And it means a lot. We thank you so much for coming in.
No, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. And I'm like really pumped that like three guys in their 20s are trying to normalize illness and disability. Like that's what we need, right?
Remind people, where can they find your blog?
trippingonair.com.
cool. trippingonair.com. thank you so much for coming
tripping
in.
Thanks for having me.
Tripping on air
tripping on air.
Okay, yeah, well, just Google it. I'm sure if you put tripping, you'll still find it. thank you so much for listening. We hope you all enjoyed it. We'll be back next week with another fun, fascinating episode, as we always do. Go on over to Apple Podcasts. In the meantime, leave us a rating and review. It would mean the world to us. And subscribe. Hit the subscribe button. That actually makes a huge difference, too. And if you want to get at us, you can always reach out. Instagram, there's a bunch of silly shit on there. Twitter, Facebook, you can always get at us there. Or info@sickboypodcast.com, or go on over to our website.
If you want to contribute to us and help us, I mean, we're in this this amazing penthouse condo in Toronto right now. It's like amazing super penthouse. Super ballin'. I mean, like,
we've actually been doing this whole thing in a hot tub.
And you guys paid for it. So if you go on over and you want us to keep on balling out in these penthouses, you can go over to patreon.com/sickboy and help us out there. It's the reason for real. It's the reason that we get to go do these awesome trips and speak to people like you, which is amazing. And I'm sure it's past the 15th now by the time this comes out.
I think so,
most likely.
Thank you all so much for tuning into our documentary on CBC a couple weeks ago.
And if you haven't seen it, it's streamable on cbc.ca. You can watch it there.
And big thank you to our friends at Take Part, who provide the theme music for this episode. You can check them out and download all of their music at takepartinthis.bandcamp.com. And also, big thanks to Donovan Morgan, the ever so handsome Donovan, who does the sound design for this episode and this podcast in general.
That's it for this week.
I'm Brian.
I'm Taylor.
And I'm Jeremy. And this is Sick Boy.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.